Good morning, everyone. We call this committee in order, to order. A quorum is present, so we'll get started. Let's do start with the roll call.
Chair Hassan?
Present.
Hassan, present. Vice Chair Hansen?
Present.
Vice Chair Hansen, present. Republican Lee Kosnick?
Present.
Rep Kosnick, present. Rep Feist?
Present.
Rep Feist, present. Rep Igo?
Present.
Rep Igo, present. Rep Katiza Witun?
Present.
Rep Katiza Witun, present. Rep Kozlowski?
Present.
Rep Kozlowski, present. Rep Perryman?
Present.
Rep Perryman, present. Rep Richardson?
Excused.
Rep Schumacher?
Here.
Schumacher, present. Rep Smith?
Present.
Rep Smith, present. Rep Wiener?
Present.
Rep Wiener, present. Rep Zong?
Present.
Rep Zhang, present.
Thank you. Welcome to the Economic Development Committee. Before we start, this needs to be closer. Before we start, I want us to ground ourselves in a land and labor acknowledgement from Rep. Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, and for the opportunity to read this land and labor acknowledgement. Today we begin by acknowledging we are on the unceded traditional, ancestral, and contemporary homelands of the Dakota, Ojibwe, and many other Native nations. For more than 500 years, Native peoples have demonstrated resistance in the face of violent efforts to remove and separate them from their land, culture, and each other. A series of treaties ceded massive amounts of land and resources, amassing great wealth at the expense of indigenous peoples, who were forcibly removed by both the U.S. government and the state of Minnesota. We honor also the legacy of the African diaspora and of Black lives, knowledge, skills, and strengths. Much of the United States and Minnesota today, including its culture, economic growth, and development, has been made possible by the exploited labor of enslaved Africans, their descendants, and ascendants who suffered the horror of the transatlantic trafficking of their people, chattel slavery, Jim Crow, and other harms that Black people have endured throughout generations that continue today. We recognize our debt also to exploited workers past and present whose labor was and continues to be stolen through unjust practices. And thus we are deeply committed to doing our part to build relationships based on mutual trust and respect, to dismantle oppressive systems and undue harms, and actively work towards economic justice for Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples. Miigwech.
Thank you, Rep. Kozlowski. And the reason why we start with land and labor acknowledgement is that the atrocities and the injustices that exist in our communities are not a thing of the past, it's a present. Our state is a very rich state with wealth, ample of wealth. At the same time, our Black, Brown, and Indigenous people have some of the worst disparities. So I want to ground us in this space just to think about and challenge ourselves, what can we do to make sure that we are looking at the inequities that exist in our systems and what systemic barriers can we remove to make sure that every Minnesotan thrives and not, you know, just struggles every day. Thank you. We're going to start with introductions of members and staff. In your folder, there's a list of members and staff. For this committee, we can go down the list, have everyone introduce themselves and tell us about your name, pronouns, which are optional, district, and one fun fact about your district. I'll start. Odin Hassan, pronouns she, hers. District 62B, which is South Minneapolis. The most famous space in my district, sadly, is And a fun fact about my district is that you can walk around Lake Street and hear at least 10 or 20 different languages and smell 10 or 20 different foods. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Representative Jess Hansen. I represent District 55A down in the South Metro. It's all of the city of Savage in the northwest part of Burnsville. We're one of the most diverse cities south of the river, and so I'm really excited to talk about what the development of those communities look like. I also personally live in the poorest precinct in my community, and so making sure that we're providing opportunities for people who've experienced poverty for a variety of reasons is really important to me as well. So thanks. Happy to be here.
Lead Kostnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am pleased to be on this committee here with a good number of our members that represent a wide range of geographical locations throughout our state and also across the aisle, as I see probably a few more suburban members, but also members in other parts of the state, and I think that's important as we look at the state's economic development to have a resilient economy that's also diverse in its industry that we support and encourage, and also the geographic populations that are supported throughout our state to make our state a really wonderful place to do business and to live in. So I live in Lakeville. It's just south of the vice chair's district. We are border next to each other. Lakeville is considered their tagline for their economic development is that we're positioned to thrive, located along the interstate. But I'm sure Burnsville, we've got plenty of room to do economic development together. And to have a successful district next door is also successful to our districts. And I think as we talk about some of the issues and the programs that we will be discussing throughout the next 24 months, we should figure out ways that we're not competing against each other in terms of districts, but making Minnesota a better place to grow and to do business.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Sandra Feist. My district is 39B, which is the southern part of New Brighton, Columbia Heights, and St. Anthony. Very excited to be on this committee. I'm an immigration attorney, and one of the issues that matters deeply to me is supporting our new American communities. I've had the opportunity to work with Commissioner Grove on the Office of New Americans, which we're going to make permanent this year. And that's just an issue that I care deeply about and really supports our workforce here in Minnesota. I'm also a business owner. I have my own law firm with 10 employees, and so I have that perspective as well. I am super excited to be on this committee. And fun fact about my district is that Columbia Heights is home to the second largest Somali community in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Spencer Igo. I represent House District 7A, which is about half of Minnesota's Iron Range, runs from Deer River, Minnesota, to Hibbing, down to McGregor and Hill City. So when I think about economic development, I'm really excited to be a part of this community because it's kind of the future of my region. Not only do we need to continue to develop our legacy industries of mining, timber, and tourism, but also continue to develop future projects, which I've been instrumental in working on the last couple years and continuing to do that work, but also want to share that work with everyone at this committee table because it takes all of us to diversify Minnesota's economy so that, you know, as Representative Kostnick was saying, we can all thrive together, and I think we can make that happen in this committee. So super excited to be here, and you know, a fun fact about my district is, you know, it's the backbone of Minnesota's or America's infrastructure. Can't build a nation without steel. I'm proud to have that in my district. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Carly Katiza Watun. I represent Eden Prairie, which is 49B, almost about three quarters of the city of Eden Prairie. And this is my second session on economic development. I was on workforce and business development last term, and really excited to be back again. I have a lot of Fortune 500 companies in my area. And I have a degree in entrepreneurship. I think, you know, making sure that we're working with new Americans, immigrants. We know that these folks who have decided to build their lives in Minnesota really are contributing a ton to our economy. And I just want to make sure that we come out of this other side of the pandemic stronger than ever, and we do better together. So thanks.
Thank you. Representative Keselowski.
Thank you, Chair. Hello, everybody. My name is Representative Alicia Keselowski. I represent Eastern Duluth, which is District 8B. We call it Mesabe Kong in Ojibwe, which means the center of all good things. And
in Duluth, we're proud to have things like Bentleyville and come up and see our tour of lights. We are right next to Lake Superior. We have a port that connects us not only across our region, so really important to have greater Minnesota voices in this space, but also to the world. And so when we talk about economic development, my background is in business development, education. I most recently worked at the city of Duluth, so I got my cup here. But I really know and believe that, as many of you do, that everything we do is economic development. And so we have to take that holistic approach. Of course, our growing industries sustainably, but so we have an economy that lifts everybody. So look forward to working with everybody here.
Thank you. Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Bernie Perryman. I am from House 14A. I represent South St. Cloud, Waite Park, St. Augusta, and St. Joe. Lots of saints in there. And I am really proud to be on this board because, or this committee. I am a business owner. I own several franchise stores of Batteries Plus, and I've lived in St. Cloud a long time, and watching the economic development in St. Cloud has been inspiring to me, especially what is going on in St. Cloud is diversity. Lots of diversity, and our Somali community is growing, and they are so prime to be the next workforce. And they are so prime of being entrepreneurs. I work very closely with them and want to get that strength going. I'm also on the workforce board for Central Minnesota in St. Cloud. And what I would say I'm proud of is the Cop House. I am a board member of the Cop House, and you may have heard of it or not, but it's one in Minnesota, and it has been built to help understand neighborhoods of diversity, equity, inclusion at the young children age and parents' age. And this house is a safe place for them to go in the neighborhood where they get dental services, legal services, all these great services that is run by policemen. And so policemen get this reputation of they're good. They're good, and the children hug them and say, I love you, and it's just been very inspiring, and they are planning two more cop houses in my area, one in Waite Park and then another on the east side. So thank you for having me. I am very excited to be here.
Thank you. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Joe Schumacher. I'm in my seventh term here in the Minnesota House representing southwestern Minnesota bordering the states of South Dakota and Iowa. I'm a small business owner back home having three storefronts along our main street in Laverne. The fun fact for our district is that Laverne is home to the second largest nutcracker collection in the world. So if you ever need a place to go,
who's the first?
Do that. Just outside of Seattle, Washington. So for now.
Yeah, thank how you. Close?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Schumacher, I think I remember reading an article where in that town there's more nutcrackers than humans. Is that correct?
Can confirm.
That's
or deny.
That's wonderful. My name's Representative Andy Smith. I'm from Rochester. I want to echo what the Representative Kosnick said about it's great that we have such a wealth of greater Minnesota representation on this economic development committee. I am a small business owner as well, own two small businesses in Rochester, and very excited to be on this committee. Fun fact about Rochester is, despite the many great Fortune 500 companies that we have here, the largest private employer in the state is in my district, the Mayo Clinic, so happy to be on this.
You mentioned Mayo Clinic, right?
Had to, yeah. It's in the contract.
Thank you very much. Representative Mike Wiener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Wiener. My district is 5B, which is the center of Minnesota. I say it's not quite heaven, but you can see it from there. It's a nice area, pretty rural. I'm very happy to be on this board as a small business owner. It's something I'm very passionate about. Is growing business and opportunities for the future, for the next generations. My business, we recycle waste wood, so we take thousands of tons every year that would be have no value and process it into something that has value. So we are kind of a unique and niche market, and pretty poor area as well. So a lot of the things that pertain to the cities we deal with as well. Little known fact, I guess, is we have a rather large Amish community in our area. So, and a Latino community as well. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jay Sean.
Thank you, Madam Chair Nyozhong. My name is Jay Sean. I proudly serve the southeast corner of the great city of St. Paul. A little bit about myself. I'm a community organizer. My family owns a small business. And I am the state representative for our Olympic gold medalist, Sunisa Lee. And so proudly serving her here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And then staff, our committee administrator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Travis Reese, I am the committee administrator for this committee, as well as the Workforce Development Committee with Chair Chong, and also the Labor Committee with Chair Nelson. So anything in the jobs area is sort of under committees I work with, so I'm happy to be back in those areas. I live in South Minneapolis. I have three kids who are wonderful, and they always want to watch back. They think I'm famous when I'm on screen, so I'm going to give a shout-out to Isaac, Nora, and little Miles. So I don't know what camera, but hello. So when we watch back tonight at dinner, they get the shout-out there. So whether I want to be or not. So happy to work with everybody here, and I'm really looking forward to again working on these issues again. This is, I've been on whatever iteration the Jobs Committee has been, this is now my third session working on it, so happy to be here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Elijah Henderson. This is my first committee, so bear with me as I get used to everything. I currently live in Golden Valley, so it's a little commute to get to work, but I enjoy it. I'm a recent graduate of St. John's University, so very excited to be here and be a part of this great community. Thank you so much.
Anna Shaleen, Chair and members. This is Anna Shaleen, House Research. I'm the nonpartisan researcher staffing this subject area, as I have for the last 7 years.
Good morning, everyone. Ken Savory, nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis. This is my ninth year at the House and my first year covering economic development. I also cover the areas of higher education and agriculture.
And then we have our DFL Research.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David Sullivan with DFL Research. I've been in the House for 16 years, and I think that entire time I've covered the various jobs committees. Born and raised in St. Paul, also a graduate of St. John's University, but not recently. Last night, my two kids and my wife and I took third place in bar trivia at Surly Brewing.
Thank you. That our Republican research is not here, but someone is covering for them. Do you just want to say hello and your name?
Certainly. My name is Ryan Wiskirchen. I am filling in for Lori Cousineau as GOP research for this committee this week.
Thank you very much. And our committee page is Zach. I'm going to wave Zach and say hello. All right. Thank you. The rules for this committee is in everyone's folder for your review. We won't take time to go over it. At this time, we're going to do the committee jurisdiction overview from nonpartisan staff.
Chair and members, Anna Shaleen, House Research. So as you've heard, this has often in the past been a single committee with the Economic Development and Workforce Development Committees, labor sometimes also. So I'm going to start by just giving, we've had a lot of questions this year as it's been split up about, well, what is the difference between workforce development, economic development? So I'm just going to give you a little rule of thumb to go by. If you're helping workers get jobs, that's probably a workforce development program and in that committee. If we're helping businesses create jobs or create more businesses or helping local governments bring more businesses to their area, that's likely going to end up in this committee, economic development. And if you have an issue that applies when people already have a job, such as wages, hours, unions, that's likely going to end up in the Labor Committee, though there are still going to be ongoing conversations between the chairs with different bills in their paths. And if you have any questions about trying to figure out where a bill goes, again, you can consult me, Travis, we'll help you figure it out. Got three short documents to introduce you to today. First one is Economic Development Finance Committee policy purview. Again, so the main areas, this is groups by the chapters of statute that will probably be covered by this committee. The big one is the first one, Chapter 116J. Most of the work of this committee has to do with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED. And they'll be talking today and saying a lot more, so I'll just be brief. Chapter 116J has details on all the different business and community development programs that fall within this committee, mostly helping technical assistance to businesses, funding for businesses, and funding for community development programs. Smaller areas that also fall within this committee are Chapter 116M, the Emerging Entrepreneur Program, which is a specific business development program. 116U, Explore Minnesota Tourism, which is helping bring people to our state. And this also chapter also covers the film subsidy programs that Minnesota has. Chapter 298, Iron Drain Resources and Rehabilitation. This is an independent, another state agency. It's focused on economic development of the Iron Range. It's funded by taxes on mining and not generally by state appropriations, so they don't tend to come up in our omnibus bill, but if there's a change to that policy, it'd be in this committee. Chapter 446A, the Public Facilities Authority. They run funding programs for certain types of local infrastructure, often water management. Deed may talk about them. And Chapter 469, this is a bunch of specialized economic development authorities, one of the most famous of which is the Destination Medical Center. And those organizations, again, are economic development. All right, so then two other documents I'll just give you briefly. This is an area, there are a lot of acronyms and nicknames for programs that aren't the same names that are in the statute. So this document, Economic Development, Employment, and Labor, Acronyms and Nicknames. I recommend just putting this in the save folder of your committee folder. So if you ever walk in late one day and we're saying some sort of alphabet soup, you don't know what's going on, you can look in here and get a little like, oh, okay, that's this. Particularly relevant to this committee, I'll point out right now, we will talk a lot about MIF, the Minnesota Investment Fund. It's one of our major business job creation programs. We will also, however, talk about the MIFs, which are the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, which are private foundations the state often partners with to run programs in greater Minnesota. Again, these things can be confusing, particularly if you're new to the committee. Finally, we've got the Economic Development and Job Creation Programs in Minnesota. This covers all the economic development programs run through the state, including ones in other agencies. But if you look in here, final, it says agency. If you want to scroll down, anything that says deed would be something covered by this committee. And that just gives you little capsule summaries of all the many different programs we have. And if, say, you have a particular business development idea, it might be a good idea to start here and be like, well, do we already have a program that does something similar? Something maybe that you could tweak or adjust in order to meet your specific goals. So, again, these are just sort of background reading to help you out if you're getting new to the area. And I am here, as always, to draft bills, answer questions, do anything I can that might be helpful for you as you're doing your work in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Savory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be working off two documents that were in your packet. The first one is just a small, brief set of slides that were printed out, including your packet. I'll just go over those briefly here for a moment. My colleague, Micheline, kind of went over the finance accounts for the committee, but I'll just kind of go over them briefly again. So as my colleague mentioned, the deed is split up into two committees. A piece of that agency is in this committee, economic development, and a larger piece is in workforce development. So of that, there is the deed business and community development division. That is within the purview of the economic development committee, and then specifically the Minnesota Investment Fund, the Emerging Entrepreneur Program, And also the deed, Minnesota Trade Office is in our jurisdiction as well. Additionally, economic development authorities, as well as Explore Minnesota Tourism, which was formerly in the environment area, now folded in under the economic development area. The Destination Medical Center, as mentioned before, the IRRB, as mentioned before, and then the Public Facilities Authority, or PFA. I'm just flipping the page over. I just want to list it off a group of funds and funding sources that the committee will be utilizing in building the omnibus bill, or for bills more generally that come before the committee. The first one is the general fund. That's the fund that members of this committee will be used probably most frequently for all the tax receipts for the state go. And generally, most bills will use the general fund as their funding source to fund, say, an initiative, an idea, or a state agency. Second on the list is the remediation fund. This fee is more associated with the Department of Agriculture, but is generally used for pollutant cleanup and environmental response. Below that is the Workforce Development Fund, or WDF. This is funding for employment and training programs, and the source of that funding is revenue from a special assessment on employers of the state. Below that is the Special Revenue Fund. This is kind of a large fund that many committees use with various fees for various programs that are deposited into a special revenue fund, and there are various accounts within the special revenue fund. And then finally, federal funds is relatively self-explanatory. Obviously, this is money coming from the federal government. I'll flip the page one more time. I just wanted to go over three appropriation types that the committee will kind of run into as we do the committee's work. The first one being the direct appropriation. So as you're kind of thinking of bill ideas, many of those bill ideas will kind of revolve around appropriating money directly to a program or state agency for a specific period of time. That's what's called a direct appropriation. And some of that time you'll use the general fund, or most of the time you use the general fund, and sometimes you may use another fund, like the Workforce Development Fund. The second one on the list there on the bottom is the statutory appropriation. The difference between the direct appropriation and the statutory appropriation is the statutory appropriation is in statute. It is permanent until it's changed by the legislature. So it doesn't need to be adjusted every year. When you make a statutory appropriation, it stays until it is changed or deleted. And then finally, the open appropriation. So this is a form of a statutory appropriation, but it's where a funding level necessary to fulfill the obligation that is made available in a fiscal year. So an example of that would be a formula. A good example of that would be the K-12 funding formula, which is a statutory appropriation, but as the formula changes, it appropriates that amount of money for that specific purpose. The Destination Medical Center, for example, is an open appropriation based on a formula to have money for that economic development. And then flipping the page once more, you'll see a large pie chart. I just wanted to give members a sense of the volume of dollars in which this committee and other committees are dealing with. Not going to put a lot of comment into this, but wanted to point out on the right-hand side, you'll see a line that says jobs, deed, commerce, 2.5%. When comparing kind of the various pieces of the pie, it's important to know that when the pie chart changes and the pieces of the pie move, that allows funding to kind of flow between the various items. So if there's a particularly large piece of the pie, say K-12 education or health and human services, as those large pieces of the pie kind of change, grow, and evolve, the amount of funding available for other committees changes, grows, and evolves as well. Flipping the PowerPoint over one more time, I just wanted to remind members of the budget enactment timeline. This is an odd-numbered year session, so this committee will be setting the budget, or the legislature will be setting the budget for state government for the upcoming fiscal years of fiscal years 24 and fiscal years 25. So there's kind of some marks on the left-hand side of the column, kind of places where major parts of the budget process. So we're coming up to we'll be coming up to the February forecast where it says end of February, and preceding that in mid to late January will be the governor's budget recommendations, which will come on or before the January 24th of this month. Then in March, House Ways and Means Committee and Senate leadership will release established spending targets, so how much a committee or a certain area will be able to spend or allocate. Then in April, those omnibus finance bills or finance bills will leave the House floor and then will enter conference committee with the Senate. And then in May, conference committees will conclude, that work will be finished, and then those conference reports will return to the House floor for approval or be sent back to conference committee. And then final step in the process, the governor will eventually veto or approve those conference committee reports as they come to him. So that kind of wraps up the PowerPoint slide. I was just going to switch over quickly, Madam Chair, to a spreadsheet which kind of lays out the general funding of our committee's jurisdiction. So if you look at page one of the spreadsheet, I just want to orient members to kind of the first iteration of this. And there's three columns to kind of pay attention to. You'll see kind of smack dab in the middle is FY22-23. That's the biennium we're currently in. And then you'll see two base columns to the right of that. So the base for FY24-25, that is the next biennium, the two-year period in which this committee will be budgeting for. And then FY26-27, that is the estimate of the biennium after the 24-25 biennium. Generally, if you look at line 7 in the base column for 24 and 25, you'll see our total there of $198,338,000. That is the base for this committee. So when someone asks you what's the base that you're dealing with, that is the answer. That's what the resources available for the committees within our jurisdiction. So I won't kind of go down the list, but as members take a look and have questions, please feel free to reach out. Happy to talk and discuss this further. But Madam Chair, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Savory, and thank you, Ms. Shalene, for this wonderful presentation. And up next, we transition into. Are there member questions? Okay. All right. Up next, we transition into a presentation from Department of Employment and Economic Development. We have Commissioner Steve Grove and Deputy Commissioner Kevin McCannon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, and good morning, members of the committee. My name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, joined by my colleague, our Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development, Kevin McKinnon. And wow, what a great committee you've pulled together here. It was just fascinating to hear your stories, the districts that you come from, the expertise that you bring to this committee. We have a huge opportunity this session to do some big things for our state, and to see this committee representing so many corners of our state and professions and expertise is exciting for me to partner with all of you on the road that's ahead. So the chair has asked myself and my colleague today to walk through a little bit about what DEED does, how we're structured, particularly focused on economic development. We're going to spend some time doing that. We'd like to make this as conversational as possible, so if you have questions as we're going, please feel free to interrupt us, raise your hands, interject questions as we go. There's a lot that DEED does, and so we'd like to make this as conversational as possible, and of course we'll save time at the end for questions as well. So with that, I'll begin, and there we go. It's going to work with the arrows. Our mission at DEED is really simple. It is to empower the growth of the Minnesota economy for everyone. In fact, this is a picture of that mission painted on our wall at our new headquarters at the Great Northern Building. We'd love to have you by. We just shifted to a new facility recently. But we are a very mission-driven agency. And I think, importantly, when you think about DEED, it's important to think about growth. Really, our job is to take the taxpayer dollars that you entrust our agency with and inject them back into the economy to help it grow. We are not an agency that does a lot of regulation. We're not an agency that is rife with a ton of policy provisions. We're an agency focused on programs, grants, levers, incentives, the things that we're going to do strategically to make Minnesota's economy work for everyone. And that's why we're such a mission-driven agency and why you'll hear a lot from us both internally and externally about the kinds of programs that we roll to do just that. Uniquely for DEED and uniquely for our state, we have both economic development and workforce development in the same agency. That is not always the case when you have a state agency focused on these topics. Most states have a workforce development agency and economic development agency. Minnesota is unique. We think it's a strength in the sense that it brings together both parts of an equation in an economy where you have both job seekers you're trying to find opportunity and companies are trying to grow to create new and better jobs in our state. And so having both of those divisions in-house in the same agency is a unique strength Minnesota has and one that we really try to leverage. And it's why part of what you'll see us convey to you today is what we do in economic development. And then there's a whole other body of work in workforce that Representative Zhang and others will handle in that committee within the House focused on that component of what our agency does. So in a nutshell, we work to attract and retain great businesses and work to connect workers to jobs in our economy. That's the big picture. When you drill down a little further, you'll see that DEED is really organized to kind of address every issue
that a worker or business might face in the economy. We are an agency that includes money to fund the development of startups. We're an agency that gives money to people when they're unemployed through our unemployment insurance program. We help those who have visual impairments through our State Services of the Blind initiative. We have incentives to help big companies want to come and build here versus in Wisconsin or Texas or Florida or what have you. So it is a pretty diverse programmatic spectrum based on how this state has long contemplated what are the things the government should be doing to grow an economy for a worker and for a business through a variety of different scenarios they might find themselves in. As you think about our group and what we do and where we're headed as an agency, of course, you'll study our statutes, you'll understand what we're asked to do by the legislature, and we take that seriously, and it is kind of our foundation. And then there's the strategy of what it is that we're going to focus on as an agency in the coming years. And I mentioned the Governor's Council on Economic Expansion in this conversation because last year, the governor convened a group of leaders that were pulled together at this unique juncture in our economy that we believe is quite an inflection point, not only for Minnesota, but for the country, and asked that group of leaders, some private sector, some public sector, some in philanthropy, some in business, a very diverse group of backgrounds and perspectives, to create a 10-year roadmap for Minnesota's economy and give us a sense for where should we be headed as a state at this really unique time. COVID has upended almost everything. In some cases, it has accelerated trends that we saw coming. In other cases, it had created new ones. We wanted to take a beat and say, all right, what do the experts say our state should be doing, and not just government, but every actor in our state, to make sure we have an economy that does work for everybody? And this council issued a report. It's extremely readable, as government reports go. It's about 25 pages, so it's quite the playbook. And it has a lot of detail and ideas on ways that we can grow our state's economy. You'll see many of those reflected in the governor's budget a week or two from now. But it also, at a big picture level, makes the point that we are at an inflection point in our economy as it comes to equity, and that Minnesota ignores the racial wealth gaps and geographic wealth gaps that we face in our state at our own peril, purely from an economic standpoint. And to get to a place where our economy can be more productive, can produce better jobs, more opportunity, higher standard of living, and a better place to live, we've got to be thinking about five basic commitments that are going to be central to our future. And they're listed here on the slide, committing to our people, committing to our communities, committing to our businesses, committing to innovation, and committing to infrastructure, all under this banner, this rallying cry, frankly, that our state needs to treat this moment for equity and for growth seriously, and that the decisions that we make in the next few years, and I would argue even in the next few months in this committee, in this body, are going to affect decades of growth and possibility in our state. So it's a powerful report. We'll circulate it afterwards if you hadn't had a chance to read it. Again, very accessible, but it'll give you just kind of a sense of the thesis that the governor and our team are bringing to this moment, and that will play out, I'm sure, in a lot of the discussions that we have as a group. And I want to pause here just for a second to speak to this issue of equity, because it's one that I think COVID has laid bare for our whole state, and certainly for our agency as we think about our role in our economy and how we grow it. When you look at some of the progress that's been made over the past few years, if you've been following the Star Tribune lately, you've seen some positive progress in the racial wealth gaps that we have. But DEED as an agency is centrally positioned within the governor's cabinet and within all of state government to have a laser-like focus on equity in Minnesota's economy. And I think we knew that on the first day we had these jobs under this governor, and we were reminded of that even more boldly after the murder of George Floyd and after the COVID pandemic only accelerated some of those disparities and challenges that we face. We as an agency have made five racial equity commitments to animate the ways in which we tackle this issue broadly. There's not just one thing you do as an agency to tackle racial disparities. There's a lot of things you got to do, from who's in the building to how the culture is oriented to where the money goes, frankly, is probably the most important thing, to how programs are examined in terms of their structure. Are they systematically organized to help shrink gaps in our economy? Again, government isn't here to do the things that business will otherwise do. It's here to do the things that that are gaps in our economy. And so we're oriented in that way. And I'll just say in the past 4 years, we've been able to really make some progress here as an agency. We've got a lot more to do on the equity front, and I know that'll be a part of our conversations here. But just to give you a little bit of a sense of our agency and the progress that we have made, about $36 million from DEED to BIPOC businesses under the governor through a variety of different grant programs. We've moved four times more dollars to BIPOC businesses in the last few years than the previous years before the pandemic. We've driven a 60% increase in SBDC consultations. These are small business consultations for early startups and founders who have companies and are founders of color. 60% more of those founders have received services over the past few years than previously. 4 times more angel tax credit dollars have gone to BIPOC founders. We've directed a record $9.5 million in small business partnership funds to early stage founders. 1 in 4 of our Launch Minnesota grantees are BIPOC founders. 10% jump in the relief grant structure to BIPOC founders. And we put almost $6 million into Minnesota's cultural malls. I don't say this is a victory lap. I don't say that this was all us. This was in partnership with this body, with the Senate, and several others. But I just mention it because programs like Main Street Revitalization, our targeted grant programs, our internationally trained professionals and healthcare programs, our tech training for BIPOC youth, this is just how we wake up in the morning at Deed. It's what we think about when we think about growth. And I'm just looking forward to more conversations on that with all of you in the coming months. Our overall organizational structure, as I said, is larger than just economic development. We have a workforce development department, workforce service department, and, of course, our general support services. But today, we're going to go deeper on economic development. And so before I turn it to my colleague, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, to kind of start us off there and we'll have a conversation, I realized at the top I didn't really even introduce myself for those of you I haven't met before. So I'm going to take just a minute to do that. Again, Steve Grove, Commissioner of Deed. And I've been in this job for the last 4 years. It's been the best job I've ever had, the only job I've ever had in government, though. I come from the private sector. I spent 12 years at Google before that. I was originally from Minnesota. I grew up in Minnesota until college and then went to California and then ended up in Silicon Valley. Came back about 5 years ago with my wife and our two twins. They were 2 at the time. They're 6 now. They're kindergartners. We're navigating snow days and everything else like the rest of you. But really glad to be back in my home state these last few years. And it's just an honor to lead this department that is so central to our state's growth. And I hope that we can bring some sort of business expertise and other sector expertise into a government role at a time when I think that that's helpful for our state. And I'm just proud to serve the governor and partner with all of you. So with that introduction aside, I'm going to turn to my colleague and friend Kevin McKinnon. He's going to walk through some of the programs. And again, as we go, please just questions, thoughts, comments as we go, please just feel free to interrupt us. We'll kind of tag team this, and honored to turn it over to Kevin.
Thank you, Commissioner and Chair and members. Kevin McKinnon, I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at Deed. Just by way of introduction, I've been the deputy for almost 9 years at Deed, and I've actually been employed at Deed since 2006, always in the Business and Community Development Division, and so pleased to be here today, and certainly to talk about a very exciting group of programs and individuals that we have working at Deed. So in our economic development unit, we're organized. We have 4 main budget areas, if you will, or business units. The first, business and community development, which is a lot of the programs that we'll be talking about. This is by far the largest budget area of the group, and about 60 employees that work in that group. Minnesota Trade Office, small budget, 10-11 staff, do a lot of work obviously globally, and I'll talk about each of these divisions here as we move along. The Office of Broadband Development, which is actually in the Ag Committee under their jurisdiction, is also housed in the Economic Development Unit. And then, of course, Economic Analysis and Labor Market Information, which is primarily a federally funded program. But you might be familiar with some of that from the unemployment rates that that we announce every month. So next slide. So the first division that I'd like to talk about is the Business Community Development Division. This is really where we're serving businesses and communities. And we do that not only directly from Deed, but we also do it in partnership with hundreds, literally hundreds of other organizations and cities. We don't do a whole lot direct to business. However, we provide a lot of funding to a variety of partners to actually implement a lot of the programs. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as we get to those individual programs. But really the crux of all this is how do we help our businesses retain existing jobs, grow new jobs, and promote investment? How do we help our communities be successful and vital and have the infrastructure that the business community and entrepreneurs and others need to support business development? Information and access to resources. This is a big piece of what this group does is provide as much information to others who are advising. We have almost 500,000 businesses here in the state, and through our partners and through our digital resources, we're trying to get as much information out to people as possible. And then finally, we also fund cooperative training programs between businesses and higher education institutions through our group. So if you think about anything business and community, I think Ms. Jolene described it very well. Everything that we do for businesses and communities really is going through this division. So just as an example, in fiscal year 22, about $240 million for 650 projects was awarded last fiscal year. Primarily, this is state funding. We have a little bit of federal funding. There is more coming that I'll talk about in a minute. But this number has increased substantially over previous biennials, and of course, it has been a result of all the work that we've done through through the COVID pandemic. We track, as a result of a lot of the requirements that are on our programs through the legislature, things like leveraged investments, new jobs, existing jobs that have been retained. And so you can see the types of funding that we leverage, private funding that we leverage, and then what the businesses and projects that we're assisting are creating and retaining from a job creation perspective.
And I'll just chime in here to add that, you know, this is a considerable amount of money when you see it on a slide like that, and of course it leverages considerable amounts more. Compared to other states, Minnesota ranks around 43rd or 44th in the amount of money we spend on economic development. So we are in the far back of the pack in terms of how much we invest in incentives and some of these levers that help businesses grow here. Part of that is a tradition of relying on other attractive parts of our state in terms of infrastructure and education, what have you. But part of it, I think, has been a little bit of a resting on our laurels. So you'll begin to hear more from us on how we want to address some of these discrepancies between our competitors and ourselves on incentives. But it's definitely a dynamic topic for us at the agency as we think about competing for some of these companies that create really high-paying jobs for our state.
Great. So within business community development, we've got different operating units. And business finance is one of our largest from a programmatic perspective. This group administers over 25 different financing programs. Some are very small, some are very large. You can see some of the main ones that are listed here on the slide. A lot of this money is either directly to businesses through cities and counties, to businesses, or through many of our nonprofit partners to businesses. It is a series of grants, loans, and tax credits that have been approved and that we have authority to run. Some of the names of the programs that you might be familiar with, the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, the Minnesota Investment Fund, both of which are programs that we use to incent large investment and job creation projects, the Emerging Entrepreneur Program, that we work with a lot of qualified nonprofits to administer loan programs for small neighborhood type businesses. The Minnesota Angel Tax Credit, as the commissioner mentioned, and Launch Minnesota grants for our startup and technology community. And then you might have heard a little bit about our state small business credit initiative, and those that maybe have been around long enough might remember that this is our second iteration of the state small business credit initiative. It is a federal program. We are receiving $97 million from the U.S. Department of Treasury over the next 6 years. And we will run six different programs through this money. We've rolled them out this fall, and things are starting to happen now where we're getting lenders, businesses are starting to apply, we've got banks enrolled. We can go into more detail on this program at any time, but I just wanted to make you aware of that large program is existing in our business finance group.
It's an incredibly powerful program. I mean, $100 million. $100 million coming in from the federal government for small businesses, and really focused on helping those who can't as easily walk into a bank and just pull out a loan and go build their business. So there's some huge equity benchmarks there. Federal government's assets to make sure that 25% of those dollars go to economic disadvantaged groups. Our aim is 50, so we're trying to double what the federal requirement is. And like we said, six different levers here, but just a huge opportunity for our state.
Mr.
Mr. Commissioner, can we pass? Lead Kasnick has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the Job Creation Fund and the Minnesota Investment Fund, and actually it's good to hear about all these, but can you give us a sense of how many state dollars are going into utilizing that fund? Those couple ones, anyways.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, the current biennium is about $18 million, and I believe in the base it's roughly about $20 million between those two funds. That's generally about our run rate. So we award about that amount of money each year for each different program.
Madam Chair, is that Deputy Commissioner, the $20 million, $18 million, is that between the two, the Job Creation Fund and the Minnesota Investment Fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, the Minnesota Investment Fund currently is about $10 million, in the base is about $12 million, and the Job Creation Fund is $8 million per year.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You may continue.
Great. Thank you. The next business unit that we have in BCD is called Business Development. This is where we have staff based regionally across the state, both business development managers and workforce strategy consultants. Our business development managers work with businesses in your communities along with your cities and counties to ensure that they are aware, accessing programs, and generally helping out with development activities in the region. The business development group also works specifically in industry sectors, and maybe there's industries of note here, such as advanced manufacturing or the plastics industry or the timber industry, those types of things. They have expertise in those areas and certainly work with the groups that are working with businesses in that area. Additionally, our workforce strategy consultants are the ones that are working with the employers to access not only a lot of the workforce development resources that are available, but to think about strategies and different talent attraction strategies and the way that inclusion works within a lot of communities, and how our businesses can access hidden talent pools, if you will. And so they've done a lot of work over the last couple of years in connecting people to employers for a lot of these opportunities. The other piece of this is the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership, which does the collaborative training programs between business and higher ed. And, of course, just recently, the Energy Transition Office, which really is focused on our eight host communities around the state that operate power plants that are going to be retired over the next number of years. And so that group resides in our business development group as well. Next slide is our community finance area. Many of your communities have accessed these funds quite frequently over the years. Not only do we manage existing programs here, but a lot of the special appropriations that occur in the bonding bill actually go through this group, as well as some of the larger programs that the legislature has passed, such as the Destination Medical Center and the Regional Medical District up in Duluth. So some of the programs, business development, public infrastructure, these types of programs are meant to lower the cost of development. So essentially lowering the cost on business, but also lowering the cost on the communities of installing the infrastructure. It's basically public infrastructure, so water, roads, sewer lines, et cetera. And so we operate a suite of programs in that area. Additionally, we've been very active with our brownfields and redevelopment programs over the years. We take the approach in this group that if you can develop on a brownfield, we utilize existing access to existing roads, water, sewer. You're accessing people that are in the area. And all in the same breath, you're increasing the tax base for the community as you redevelop underutilized properties. And so we do that through a couple of different programs, contamination cleanup and the redevelopment program. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about those programs, but you can see a picture on the slide of sort of what we in this case, demolished up in Moorhead, and what was what the development project was that replaced it. And so you can see the importance of what that might play for the community and its residents.
This would be a good time just to kind of address the fact that these dollars that we put into the economy all have to be held to the high standard of, would this project happen if we didn't give the money? And the answer to that question always has to be no. And this is a great example of it, because cleaning up a brownfield, taking a contaminated site and making it work for business, that's expensive. Developers don't budget for that. They don't touch projects where that's a challenge. So this is the clearest lane possible where government just simply has to do it. But we apply that standard to every incentive dollar we put in the market. It's sort of the but-for argument. Would this project happen but for the investment of the state? And we hold some pretty high standards to that when we talk to our partners to make sure we're investing taxpayer dollars really wisely and only doing things that would only happen with our help.
I just wanted to mention our last program in the community finance area is the Small Cities Development Program. This is for non-entitlement communities. It's a federal program. It's through it's called the Community Development Block Grant Program. We get about $18 million a year to work with the non-entitlement communities. Those are generally greater Minnesota communities. Many of our cities and counties, like in the metro as an example, they get their own direct appropriation from housing and urban development at the federal government level. The next slide is another group, our small business development area. This group really doesn't touch much from a financing perspective, but is really focused on partnerships and delivering information and resources to businesses all across the state. It is a collection of offices. The commissioner mentioned earlier our Launch Minnesota program, which really works with and drives our technology ecosystem and technology businesses in the state. Our Small Business Assistance Office, which provides information and actually operates a call center where we answer 30 to 40,000 calls and emails a year from businesses in your districts about various items, whether what type of business should I establish, what should be the corporate structure, what are my taxing implications if I choose this, do I need a permit to do X, Y, and Z. So that's where a lot of the information and resources comes out. Our Small Business Development Center program, which is actually a federal program as well, through the SBA, we operate nine regional centers all across the state, eight of which are in greater Minnesota, one here in the metro. This provides up to 10 hours of free counseling service for small businesses, either starting a business or trying to grow a business, and whether they need help with marketing or accessing financing. We have staff through these partnerships that we have across the state to deliver that service. And a relatively new office, our Office of Small Business Partnerships. This is really where a lot of it happens, where we're giving money to nonprofits and other partners to do a lot of work on our behalf. We have roughly 60 or 70 partners across the state that we work with, nonprofits that are either culturally based or regionally based that serve our businesses, and particularly a lot of work where our equity work really shines, because that's the way to reach more businesses and in a culturally appropriate way, in particularly here in the metro. So we work with a lot of great organizations, many of which you're probably familiar with, all across the state.
Yeah, I mean, I think every one of you represents a lot of small businesses, right? And you probably are aware of how much of an explosion there has been in our state around small business creation, a 41% uptick month over month of small businesses getting started since the pandemic. For me personally, I grew up in a small business family. Many of you probably did too. My dad had a small landscaping business. My wife and I care deeply about small businesses and the next generation too. We have a small nonprofit called Silicon North Stars, where we help young underserved youth begin careers in technology, most of them youth of color, all of them below the poverty line. These programs inside of state government are really powerful. The governor cares deeply about them. And I'll just say this about the unit. We are bringing this together under a new small business director that we're currently hiring for right now. In fact, the application window just closed, I think, yesterday. So we want to make Deeds Small Business Division much more easy for your constituents to understand, to navigate. It is daunting to be a small business for a whole host of reasons, but when you're looking at getting government access to resources, there's a lot out there. I mean, even just this slide has a lot to it. We want to make that a lot simpler, and so you'll see that as just a big priority for us in the coming days. And we have Representative Katiza Watun and others here who have fought for a lot of these programs at the legislature before, and we'll have more of that in the coming months.
Yeah, and importantly there, too, from a state perspective, yes, there's a lot of information, but you also are very well aware that there are a lot of information in various other organizations as well, and sort of trying to think about how that all makes sense to a business owner is really what we're trying to get at there. The other thing that I mentioned about our small business group, and particularly our small business partnerships, is our Main Street Revitalization Program. That was passed, obviously, a couple of years ago to work with corridors all across the state. That also exists in that group, along with our child care economic development program, which has become a major issue over the last number of years.
I think we want to make sure we have time for questions. We might skip over the results page here, but you have it in your deck. So if you want to reference kind of the impact of some of these programs, it's there to see.
We have just one question.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you share with the committee kind of how you measure when you utilize these programs, how do you measure geographic distributions? If you call the metro 7 counties, 11, 13, and how do you make sure that we're reaching all areas of the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Koznick, we can provide you data on every one of these programs in terms of where the awards go, and we'll often produce a map when we do an awards designation to just give you a visual sense of it. Many times statutes for these programs will have requirements in terms of how much money goes to the 7-county area versus the rest of the state. In fact, most do. So in a lot of ways, when we're evaluating grant applications and looking for who's going to receive the dollars, we're looking at the statutes first to see where those numbers play out. So we are a very statewide agency in that sense, and I think upon follow-up we can share with you for each of these programs kind of what the actual breakdown looks like.
Great, thank you. Nope, that's great.
Chair, there was a brief mention of broadband earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Could you hit on that? Mm-hmm. Or is that another conversation for
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, yeah, we are going to speak to it in a moment in the slides. It does live in a different committee, but it's hard to have any conversation about economic development, to your point, without talking about broadband because it's so fundamental. So why don't we get to that in a moment when we get to the slides, and we can talk about where it intersects with some of these pieces.
Thank you.
Trade Office.
Great. The Minnesota Trade Office is the next business unit within economic development that I just like to mention. Trade Office has been around for obviously a number of years, but does great work with our businesses to promote exports all across the globe. This is an important component of our economic development strategy. We want people selling products which are more valuable and take higher skills and pay larger wages to global markets. This is a key economic development principle, actually. And so we have a variety of programs that we run through the Trade Office. We do a lot of technical assistance directly to business, connecting them to various markets or different ideas that they may have for market development. This group also works to promote foreign investment in Minnesota. As you may know, we have about 900 foreign-owned businesses here in the state that make large investments and are responsible for employing a lot of citizens across the state. We also operate overseas trade offices. These are through consultants who we contract with in key markets where we know there's not only an opportunity from an export and investment perspective, but also where we see a lot of our businesses with their demand.
One of the things the Trade Office did really innovatively last year is focus on immigrant exporters in particular, those who've come to our state and are looking to export products outside of it. So we built a whole new division of the team that is focused on programming for those immigrant exporters in their languages with unique training for them. In fact, the program is so successful it won the DEEDS Gold Star Award for customer service last year. So we're trying to always rethink how we're navigating our trade opportunities that are really unique global window. And I'll say we just found out this morning that our state, Minnesota, year over year saw a 22% increase in exports in Minnesota compared to a 9% increase for the nation. So we are outpacing the country on trade right now, which is great to see.
So many of you might be familiar with some of the things that they do from a trade mission perspective. Some of those, obviously, the governor-led trade missions are one piece of this. But there's also different shows and various groups of businesses that go once in a while to some of these other markets from an export perspective, but also from an investment perspective. You're also probably aware that we host delegations quite frequently from all across the globe. There are plenty of visitors that come, and the trade office does provide protocol services for a lot of those meetings and ensures that we're doing appropriate culturally thing with other countries, but also the standards of protocol from a government perspective.
Again, just because we want to make sure there's time for questions, I'm going to skip to broadband, unless there's a question now. Sure.
Talking about trade office, like, this is wonderful, but as we know, government is complex, and it's not easy to navigate through systems. So what are the steps State is taking to take this information to communities that normally wouldn't have access to this information? Because I'm sitting here, I'm like, this is wonderful. And it's wonderful that you said we have increased our, you know, export. But are we going out of our way to, like, include information sessions or listening sessions in community spaces so then everyone has this information?
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. This is the most global team we have at DEED. It has the most language capability. It has the most ties into communities that are from abroad. There's a couple of things that we do. One, I mentioned a moment ago, this new program on immigrant exporters. We've hosted a series of community forums with immigrant communities on export opportunities over the past year in this new line of work that we've built. And what's unique there is it's actually not even just information, it's also money. We have a program called our STEP Grant Program where we can grant you up to $5,000 as a small business owner to pay for a plane ticket to go explore a market outside of our country. So there's real resources here at hand in addition to just information. So that's one way. Another is that Minnesota is home to about 30-plus consular corps members. So these are individuals who are in private enterprise or nonprofits or philanthropy who volunteer of their time to be kind of the liaison for their country in our state. Again, we're a small and mighty team of about 10 or 11 people, so we've got to leverage some volunteers here. And those leaders that represent everywhere from Kenya to the Netherlands are out in the community every day engaging with leaders there to make sure we're building those ties too. So we welcome the ability to do more here, frankly. And you're hitting on a broader point too, I think, which is just that we have so many programs and so much opportunity for money. Are we communicating enough and as effectively as we can from an outreach perspective to make sure people in the state know what it is that DEED does? It is a constant drumbeat that we are focused on with our outreach and comms teams, but one that we feel like we still need to be doing more than we are. We welcome your feedback and advice on that. Let's go to broadband if that's all right, and then we'll wrap for questions.
So as I mentioned, the Office of Broadband Development is the jurisdiction is under the Ag Committee. However, DEED has had an Office of Broadband Development since 2014. Obviously, there's state statute that guides the office and certainly some of the state goals around broadband development. But really, a lot of you are probably familiar with the broadband grant program that we run, the Border to Border Broadband Grant Program. And so that's really the state investment version of how we're trying to expand border to border broadband. But in the news recently is we are receiving a lot of money from the federal government for broadband, about $650 million right now. To build on that infrastructure and ensure that the entire state is connected and has access to. An important part of not only connecting our communities to broadband is also adoption and use. And so part of what's coming along with the $650 million from the federal government is a digital equity effort. And so over the next 8 months, We're going to be kicking off later this month a bunch of listening sessions on how we're, A, designing the program, not only the digital equity program, but also the deployment program, where we're going to be making awards to providers to install the infrastructure, but then also what's needed from a digital equity perspective. You've all heard about access to healthcare, education, having businesses access broadband services. It's critical infrastructure today. We believe that. We've known that. And over the next number of years, we're going to be working very hard to connect this whole state to broadband. So. I don't know if you want to add anything.
It's a huge priority of the governor's. We're about 92% penetration in the state, but that final 8%, really hard to get. And in addition, having a really solid digital equity plan is going to make sure that the next steps for our broadband office are really powerful. Also, just say this, Minnesota's Office of Broadband Development is nationally recognized as one of the best in the country, and several states have modeled their whole systems off of ours. So we're fortunate for that. That precedes our time in office, but record amounts of money coming out right now in this, and I think really a chance this session, if we want to finish the job, to make broadband as ubiquitous as telephones and just be connected and move forward. Do we want to talk any more here? You covered most of this, yeah, I think. I don't know if we had more questions on that. Here's some impact statements. You see that 92% of where we're at. Did you want to add something? Sorry.
Nope. Then the last piece here is our Economic Analysis and Labor Market Information Office. This is a group of about 60 individuals, mainly federally funded, to monitor and report on our labor market analysis. You're familiar with the unemployment numbers that come out every month, but this group also produces a lot of great information and articles on trying to understand what the numbers actually mean. And really, a lot of the information that they produce, our workforce development system uses. This is where the in-demand job information comes. This is where the training comes from, et cetera, to all of our counselors who are working with individuals that are seeking jobs. So I don't know if you have anything else, Commissioner, but thank you.
I do have one, right, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. It's a great overview of a lot of the different stuff that's going on to help Minnesota businesses continue to grow and attract new businesses here that, of course, provide for our families across the state. And kind of leading off of the last slide there, the economic analysis and labor market trends, where do either of you kind of see the threats to Minnesota's economy heading forward? And then also, what other opportunities do you think we can focus on and take advantage of as we work as a committee and try to make sure that Minnesota remains a good, resilient economy?
Madam Chair, Representative Koznick, it's a great question and a really fundamentally important question for all of us to consider. I think at a basic level, one of our biggest threats right now is our demography. We face the tightest labor market of any state in the entire country. Four open jobs for every one person looking for a job, and an aging population that is retired at an accelerated rate because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And if you've seen the recent numbers from Susan Brower, our state demographer, people leaving and not coming into the state at the same rate, and so we're not growing from a population standpoint. This is, in some ways, a problem of our own making. Minnesota has not had an aggressive talent attraction strategy really ever in our history. We don't even have a marketing budget, a deed, for example, to encourage people to come and want to live here. And I'm sure you've all heard commercials or seen commercials of other states saying, come and live the good life here in South Dakota or Iowa or Ohio or wherever. Exactly. That's my reaction as well. But you know what? Some of these things really do work, and we lose people because of them. Now, I came from a company that had a $1 billion marketing budget. I did not expect to come to Deed and find a $1 billion marketing budget or even a $1 million marketing budget. But when Deputy Commissioner was briefing me in my first few days in this job and told me there was no marketing budget, my jaw did hit the floor. We have got to be a more aggressive state when it comes to talent attraction, and we got to be a more aggressive state at helping the workers who are here find great jobs. There's still a major disparity between a lot of the labor that is hiding in plain sight and the employers that are looking for those workers. So I think demography is probably our biggest challenge. Our biggest opportunity is Minnesota has a lot to offer. The research will show you that when workers end up here, when businesses end up here, they love to stay. You got some of the best infrastructure in the country, a great educational system, a state that for decades has invested in talent. So it's a great place to live. You all know this. And people that come here are it's sticky. They like to stay once they're here. The cold weather is a barrier. But when people arrive here, there's a lot that we have to offer. But I will say this, and the Deputy Commissioner and I talk about this all the time, it has never been a more competitive environment right now for business attraction than it is today. Every state out there is aggressively courting new businesses, innovative businesses, microprocessors, electronic vehicle makers, major technology companies, software developers, startups, to come to their state. And Minnesota does not have the tools in our toolbox to aggressively attract these businesses and land them here. Representative Kozik mentions the Minnesota Investment Fund and Job Creation Fund. Great tools, legacy tools that we need. They pale into comparison to what other states are able to offer, and we lose deals when we don't have the kind of incentive structures we need. Now, it's always a balance. We need to land that well. But you look at something like the CHIPS Act, right? Bringing semiconductor jobs to our state, if we can land some of those federal dollars that require state action, we've got to match some of those dollars with state funds. And currently, there's no sort of fund for us to do that. There's no aspect, there's no place where we could go to do that consistently. And I'll just say this at the end, because I could go on for a long time on this question, but I'll say that while we're very proud of the department and the statutes that guide us and the tools that you've given us, there's a fundamental mismatch in our structure and in our toolbox for what the modern economy needs. You need an economic development department that can at any time of the year, at any day, navigate and be nimble with business attraction to attract businesses to come. Today, if we want to do anything unique outside of the statutes, which have very low caps for how much we can move, we've got to have the legislature approve it. In July, you're not convening together to approve economic development awards for your districts, right? You're in your districts, or you're doing your day jobs, right? We need a more nimble structure. We'll talk about that more in the future, one that's rooted in equity, one that has the ability to move quickly with your consent and partnership at all hours of the day and all days of the year to make sure we're winning for your constituents.
If I could just follow up, I appreciate that overview. It's good things to kind of have a level base among the committee to kind of chew on and think of and work on. Does the state or does DEED have a matrix of different incentives that we offer, as you mentioned, MIF and the Job Creation Fund, and other incentives that we may provide compared to our regional neighbors and other? Do you have a matrix that kind of shows how good or better that we could be doing?
Sure. Yeah, sure, Madam Chair, Representative. We certainly can provide you some comparative analytics there. And, you know, just to give you a sense, you know, let's take Ohio, right, a state that invests heavily in economic development. They spend millions of dollars a year in marketing and attraction for site selectors, talent attraction, business consultants. State of Georgia will put in $200 million just to get an auto manufacturer to come into town. I mean, we don't need to play the same game every other state does, but the disparity in these charts, and we can share them with you, is pretty stark. And at a time when it's competitive, you got to play ball. It's just how the market works.
Yeah, I'd love to get a copy of that. And, you know, some of the things that we've been hearing is some of the permitting and regulations for businesses to come in. And if we can do some work in that area, I'm sure I would that would be pointed out in your matrix as one of the barriers. So hopefully we can do some good work with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I also just wanted to follow up and comment on the opportunity to support underemployed immigrant communities. Mm-hmm. At the Office of New Americans event that you convened, I forget what the number was, but it was like $5 billion in missed opportunity, just making sure that the people who already live here, already work here, are working to their full capabilities. So excited that you're also thinking about that and working in that area.
Madam Chair, Representative Feist, just to quickly comment, I couldn't agree more, and we're grateful for your leadership on this issue. We say it time and again, there is a lot of labor hiding in plain sight. And where we see disparities or discrimination, we call it out. And where we see just a lack of connection to community, we say that's our job. That's where something like the Office of New Americans can build a bridge between employers and some of these communities where most companies don't have a multilingual HR staff or the kind of resources to navigate some of these places. You know, we spent last summer doing a summer of jobs tour where we talked about immigrants, people with disabilities, young people, recent retirees. There's a lot of these pockets where if a state's aggressive and thoughtful and culturally appropriate, we can be doing more with the people that are in our state.
Thank you.
So thank you for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, commissioners, for being here today. I really appreciate your insight and your continued partnership. I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of Representative Feist's comment about the Office of New Americans. I've had a little bit of outreach from folks in my district. We have welcomed a number of Afghani refugees over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And Minnesota has such a strong history of welcoming folks when they are in moments of need. And I'm so grateful that that is the case. I'm curious how the interplay between the Office of New Americans with Indeed might link up with Department of Labor and then some of our federal departments in terms of, you know, folks applying for green cards and we're just working through some of the difficulties of our immigration process. And if there's anything you can touch on now, otherwise I'm happy to cycle back offline. But I think that that's really important as we continue to support this new part of our labor force.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, it's a great question. And we did include a slide on that component here because it will sort of live in Representative Zhang's committee as a budget item, if you will. But it is very relevant to this committee's work because, again, workforce development is economic development right now. The office sits at Deed because workforce is its primary sort of issue area focus. Because if you have a job and you have a sustainable income, a lot of stuff follows, right? But additionally, the office has been asked through executive order to navigate the rest of state government for immigrant refugee communities. So it's speaking to the idea of green cards or accelerating some of this access. The way that Representative Feist and others have conceived of this is that we need to make sure that there is a central point at which all of state government is focused on these topics. So, you know, it's one of these issues where, and there's immigrants on this community today, right, who know this issue personally, that are run by the federal government. But there's things smart states can do, and to your point, the only reason we've even grown as a state over the past 20 years is international immigration. So this is a strategic issue as much as a kind of a moral and identity issue for our state.
Do you have a follow-up? Kaslowski, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, I'm curious if you could speak to your work and how you intersect with the tribal nations that shared geography with Minnesota. As we know, not only are our tribal nations oftentimes economic drivers for Native peoples, but also tend to be huge economic workforce employers for the folks in Minnesota. Could you speak to whether that's on broadband or workforce or other aspects, how it is that you work nation to nation?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, it's a great question, and it's something that, as you know, the governor, lieutenant governor, have asked every single agency and state government to focus on. And so we have a tribal liaison. His name's Kurt Kroshu. I'm sure you all meet him if you haven't already. He runs plenty of these issues for us, but I personally am engaged in consultation with every tribe in our state on a regular basis. And I would point out a couple of things that we have done. First, we've tried to make sure that existing programs get a better look from tribal nations, that tribal nations are eligible for. And you take a look at, for example, the Targeted Community Capital Grants program of last year. Three of those nine grants went to tribal nations to build new infrastructures on their land. That was, I think, a focused effort to make sure that we are using existing levers more effectively. We have a program called the Indian Business Loan Program, which the Deputy Commissioner can give more detail on if it's useful here, but is targeted specifically at Indian businesses. But we've also found in an audit of all of our programs, there's a lot of businesses that are in tribal lands that aren't eligible for existing programs because statutes are either outdated or need updating. You'll see some of those things across your desk this coming session of things that we want to change there to make sure more tribal businesses are eligible for these dollars. Because I think it's long time we update some of these statutes and organize them more effectively. We're also asking ourselves when we talk in these tribal consultations, what, aside from the levers we do have or the levers that we should adapt, are there new levers that we need to grow our economy in tribal lands? And I think those are some of the more interesting and creative discussions because these nations operate differently than other parts of our state, and they also drive a ton of our economic growth. And so there, I think there's an opportunity to think big about fresh ground to tread as well.
Right.
Commissioner, do you have a follow-up?
I was just going to say thank you so much for that. And, you know, I think about even in the issue of, like, a child care crisis, Fond du Lac Reservation has a program because about 60% average actually lives off reservation. And so how can we look at new opportunities, new levers, you know, helping tribal members living off the reservation become child care providers, for example. So. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Representative Perryman, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Deputy Commissioner. And Commissioner, thank you for being here. I'm from St. Cloud, and we have a very strong workforce center there with Tammy. Mm-hmm. I've met you there many times. I'm really glad to have been put on this committee because I'm learning so much about the programs, right? And when I go back to my own constituents, we have a larger and growing Somali population. Mm-hmm. And they, boy, are they smart, and they're, you know, entrepreneurs. This kind of information will be great for me to go back and talk to them. But is there like a, and this is probably more of a not a question, but ask you if there's like a one-page tool thing that a person like myself, a new legislator, and was supported by many of my constituents back home to take with me. So when I am in the marketplace that I can say, hey, Here is where you can go, a website, or I can't fix it for them, but I want to be that help and that personal hand touch tool for maybe, you know, for a hand up then a hand out and get them on the right track. Because sometimes they just don't know where to go or they're a little concerned to ask where I go. I know our workforce center's done great with that and bringing that in. So my question would be is what should I look for of what you'll need for the workforce centers that we currently have?
Yeah.
Mr. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's a great question. And this is something that we care a lot about and that has been a frustration, I think, for even just for me personally coming to an agency that has so many great programs, but how do you convey and communicate what is applicable to a given constituent or business? It's a challenging task, but it's one that we can and need to tackle. We've done a couple things. One, we have a new landing page for small businesses on our website. It's at joinsmn.com, which is kind of our economic development website, /small business. We can circulate the link later. You go there, you'll find every single thing you need as a small business to navigate our state. There's literally a phone number, as the Deputy Commissioner mentioned before, you can call and just talk to a human being about what's available there. On the workforce side, we have a website called careerforcemn.com. It needs additional focus, I will say that. And I would say, in general, our technological infrastructure the agency needs is pretty in sore need of updating. Not that technology is always the solution. Nothing beats being out in community in person yourself. And so we do a lot of that as well through our Office of Public Engagement. But some of these resources, we just want one URL to send somebody to that's going to help them navigate what they need. And we do that, to your point, in partnership with local boards and local leaders. We are just one agency, and we rely on many of these issues on partnerships locally. So I'm glad you mentioned it. It's really important. And you're right. You got a great workforce center there and a lot of really exciting opportunities in the horizon for the Saints area. So excited to work with you.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Well, thank you, Mr. Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner. I know you guys are going to be available to us throughout the session if people have questions. I know they're easily accessible, so you can call, email, schedule a meeting, and I think we are done for the day. Committee is adjourned.